Honey, I blew up the business.
Welcome to the podcast. Very exciting. We've got Kirsten Robinson here. Nice to see you, Kirsten.
Nice to see you too.
Kirsten's an entrepreneur. Would you guess it? And on a podcast about entrepreneurs, we've got an entrepreneur today. But she's a fantastic entrepreneur at a company called Nicks and Kicks, whose mission is to banish the boredom and put some healthy excitement back into soft drinks, which I'm really behind because I sort of pretty much stopped drinking a few years ago. And a can of Coke is kind of what you get offered when you go out. And I quite like the idea of more interesting soft drinks. And so flavors like blood orange and turmeric, which I really like the sound of, although I've not tried it yet, available at all good retailers like Waitrose and Tesco. And I believe you've just launched in the US.
Yes, also, yes, we are trying to get a bit further than just UK borders. But even the UK is obviously still a big market and there's a lot to do there. But yes, you can also find us abroad. You can also find us in our homeland, Germany, which we are obviously quite excited about as well, and some other European countries and the Middle East. So yes, we are quite widespread already.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really great business. And I love the design, actually. Just I used to have a brand design company many years ago, which I sold. And I love your design, how they use design. So everyone should check out Nicks and Kicks, because just from a brand point of view, it's really interesting, as well as the product. And she's also just finished a successful crowdfunding round with her business. There are finalists in the Scale Up Entrepreneur of the Year at this year's Great British Entrepreneur Award, I noticed. Prior to this, she had a high-flying corporate banking career. Well, I'm saying high-flying. Yes. She didn't say that.
No, I didn't say that.
And, she's the VP of Membership at Mentoring at Toastmasters International and volunteers at St. Mungo's Broadway. She's busy. Like a lot of our guests, she's got like a zillion things going on and she's super accomplished. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Before I forget, as I always do, or often do, this podcast is brought to you by my company, The Tech Department, which is the one that I blew up in 2017. And we did turn it around, but I don't want to do all that again. So the reason I'm talking to Kirsten is to pick her brains about what we can learn about how to avoid all these sort of catastrophes we keep on coming into. And so I'm on my mission to learn for myself, genuinely, and to help you, our beloved listener, learn too. So if you want to help me help entrepreneurs, then what you can do is subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and share it all over social media. So that's what you can do to help me help entrepreneurs. So do your bit and help me and help you. Help everybody. Let's help each other. Woo! So all good stuff. And I'm going to dive straight in because there's a sort of really great little story which I saw about Kirsten. When she first started to leave her high-flying corporate banking career back in 2013-14. She went to set up her business, but then hit the reverse gear and went back into the office and asked her boss for her old job back. So what happened there?
So basically, I started the business on the side while I was still working at HSBC. So, and I mean, I worked in the banking world. That's all I knew basically for my whole career. You know, that's my safe space. That used to be my safe space. And I had this idea a long time ago, a long time before actually handing in my notice to start a business. And had mentioned it in me and my boss, we would go out to these because our clients were building societies in the UK and other banks. So we would travel around the UK a lot. And in the evenings in the hotel, we would sometimes have a drink. And in one of those moments, I confessed to him that I was actually thinking about doing something else. And so he knew that I had a passion somewhere else. And he didn't ask many questions because he didn't want this to be, you know, awkward at some point. But he kind of knew that I was doing something there on the side. So when I handed my notice, that was my moment. And it took me a while. I had this letter actually in my drawer for quite some time. And then one day, I just don't know, I can't remember what decision, you know, what kind of, was there a special moment or something when I was really, something that really made me fed up. But I had it in my letter. Handed in the notice, And then, yes, a couple of days later, I really started to regret it. You know, like this back paddling, like in your mind, suddenly you wake up in the morning sweating, thinking, what have I just done? And then went back to him and did ask, can I have the job back? And he said no. he said no, but it was coming from a good place. He was coming from like, I know you want to do something else, not just go and do it. So I'm very grateful for him to say that. Obviously, in hindsight, I can say that at the time I was pretty cross with him. But yeah, that then helped me get out there and then actually do it. But I really needed that.
He sort of helped shove you out the door. I mean, I'm curious to know, to always sort of dwell in that moment. So that kind of, what was the going through your mind, or how were you feeling in that moment? So you'd handed your notice in and then you went to go back. What was holding you back? What was the feelings or the emotions around that was stopping you from just doing it first off?
Yeah, it's the fear of the unknown. It's just you don't know what's going to happen. It's something completely different, and you're kind of out there in the big world on your own. I have to say, obviously, I have a co-founder in the business, so she also left the corporate world to start this. So it's good to have someone else there as well to go through this with you. But apart from that, there was no one, and you know, the obviously being part of a big corporate is a safe space. It's just, you know, you're part of something big. If you one day don't know what you need to do, someone else knows and they can tell you. But if you could just go out there and, you know, especially also this, it was a completely different industry we were about to go into. We didn't know anything about food and drinks. So it's scary. It's scary, especially when you're not, you know, we weren't in our early 20s anymore at that stage. We were at a stage already when people thought you should have like a stable career. You know, you should have, by that point already, you should know what you want to do in your life, and you should have already been established in this kind of venture or in whatever your passion was. So obviously it's completely stupid now thinking back. Like, you know, in your early 30s, you're just as clueless as in your early 20s. And even approaching your 40s, sometimes it's hard to understand I really want out of life. But yeah, at the time, you know, there was a bit of pressure. So I thought, oh God, what, you know, starting from zero is quite you know, scary. So yeah, that was what was going through my mind in that moment. Yeah. And then obviously also, oh, you know, now going back to kind of cheap ready meals from Tesco's for a while because can't afford to obviously go out and do all these things you can do when you're on a salary. So yeah, different lifestyle.
Yeah. So you're going from this sort of the safe space of the corporate world with your, you know, career ahead of you, sort of into the distance, into the future with your nice salary and nice office space and expense account and people to do things for you. And you then took yourself out of that into this other space of where you've got no one else around you apart from your founder, and you don't know the industry. So you haven't got a kind of perhaps a network or a set of experiences. You're going into the true unknown. So it's not even a startup in finance or in the skill you've got. You're going to going out to the true uncharted territory. So understandably, that's scary. And so after you've kind of these mixture of anger, fear, and terror at the moment when your boss said you can't have your job back, what happened then? So after you'd kind of, you know, he kicked you back out the door again. What did he do?
Yeah, then we try to, you know, figure out, you know, day by day. I to be honest, I mean, it's 7 years ago. It's a bit, sometimes a bit hard to even now understand how we went about all these things, but we did. You know, I guess what drove us was there was a lot of passion there for what we were trying to do, and a lot of, you know, naivety as well, maybe, you know, not knowing sometimes is actually a benefit, because you just can go in, you know, with your, without having anything already in your head, you can just ask all the stupid questions and you are forgiven, for not knowing these things. So yeah, we just started up, in my kitchen, basically just making drinks and then going to markets, trying to get people to say, you know, positive things, or obviously give us feedback. They did give us feedback. They did say a lot of positive things, which was kind of probably a little bit of the catalyst for, you know, making that decision to leave, because we had so much good feedback from these people. In hindsight, or what we then later learned is that when you ask people for their opinion and you tell them, look, this is me, I made this, this is my business, and they hardly ever tell you that they hate it. They're not, this is just not, and especially me coming from a country where people are very, very honest. They would tell you to your face if they don't like something. It was a bit difficult to understand that maybe people weren't quite so honest at the time. But we learned that lesson, and then we did a bit more research, and that's probably what we spend a lot of time on at the beginning, just trying to understand, you know, what is it actually. We had this idea in our head, we knew kind of roughly what we wanted to do, but we still needed to figure out what do people actually want in terms of taste profile, sweetness, in terms of like all these things. We started from zero, you know, we're not like we didn't have someone with us that was like a drinks developer that could just go like, oh yeah, let's make this and see what happens. We just had to like start from like completely new recipes, just came up with it all ourselves, and then decided to, you know, find a place where we can actually then put the product on our shelf and get people to pick it up, and like in a normal shop, and see if someone was actually interested in buying them. So we did that for a while, and just also got a lot of research, a lot of feedback from that. And then went to like a proper manufacturer and all that. That came a bit later. But yeah, at the beginning, it was just really trying to find out what we're trying to do. You know, like do a lot of research, went into the British Library, as you do, and find statistics, data, all sorts of things to understand a bit more about consumer taste profiles and what's going on in the industry, and talk to a lot of people as well. You know, people that have been in that industry for a while. And the funny thing is, they did actually say things like, wow, you are starting a drinks business. Us being in that industry, we would never do that, you know, really? Because they saw all these obstacles in the way. And they probably have seen a lot of brands come and go in that space. And we were just going in, but, you know, a little bit blind maybe. But maybe that's what made us so successful in the end, because we just had, you know, we just went for it, because we didn't know that maybe there were some obstacles there that might be quite difficult to overcome.
That's interesting. Yeah, that kind of naive enthusiasm of, yes, we can do this, and not knowing about all the obstacles sort of allows you to overcome them.
Right. Exactly. Or, you know, this obstacle is still there, but you're at least, you know, frightened by it. And then when you get to that, there's usually a way around it, you know, but if you don't try, you wouldn't know that there was a way around it, if that makes sense. But yes, yeah. Somehow we always figured it out.
That's interesting. I've read somewhere you said that you started the business with an unrealistic plan. Does this feed into this kind of naive thing? Is it, what was the way that your naivety expressing itself? Do you feel like looking back, I'm obviously now you've got lots more experience, but looking back, you probably this sort of relatively green duo going out into the world. What were the bits that were perhaps unrealistic in your thinking, or that were really, you can see now, were the naiveties? What were the big learning moments there?
Well, it's stuff like, you know, you send out an email and you expect a response back within a couple of days. You know, we send an email to Selfridges saying, you know, here's our product, we'd love to get a meeting, and didn't hear anything back from anyone for quite some time. And suddenly, when we already thought, okay, they're obviously not interested, suddenly an email pops up saying, hey, you want to send some product over. No one would, obviously, you know, we were passionate. We were so like, this is amazing what we're doing here. But obviously the world hasn't been waiting for us to recreate that. It's not that Selfridges, when they got our email, were like, wow, this is exactly that one product we were just looking for today. Let's get them in tomorrow, kind of thing. You know, everyone's busy. I guess, you know, everyone has their kind of challenges, and they deal with it when they deal with it. And we just had to be a bit more patient there. But we learned to be patient, and now we're very good at being patient. But yeah, at the beginning, it was a little bit annoying that things took a bit longer.
So you were there with your kind of, I've got this vision in your head of you in the kitchen sort of tinkering with ingredients and bottles and you and kind of getting your ideas together, and then you start to be sending out emails and you're getting this sort of, you're starting to build up the business side of it. So what was how long was that taking? What sort of time frame was that? So it's 2014 you set up the company and you kicked out of your corporate offices and then you're in the kitchen. How long were you sort of in that real prototype phase?
So that took us quite some time, actually. And it was a steep learning curve, but it was still a long time because that was exactly the time when people were only just thinking about, you know, having maybe not as much sugar in a product. So, especially drinks. I think drinks was quite a late category in that sense. You know, everyone had already looked at like, you know, other products in the confectionery space or wherever, where can they make some adjustments. But drinks was like, you know, if you went into a bar or in a pub, there was always just the lemonade, ginger beer, et cetera. And they had like huge amount of sugar in it. And no one thought about really, oh, shall we reduce that maybe a little bit? Shall we look at other options? So us coming into the space, you know, asking questions or how can we do that? We just encountered a lot of people that were like, oh, why would you want to do that? So I think that's why it took quite some time to figure out, you know, who can help us in that space, who can really make this recipe work for a big production as well. Because obviously you have something that works absolutely amazing in your kitchen. And then if you think, okay, I have to make a bigger batch now, I'm just going to multiply the recipe. And obviously it still works. But when you then carry that recipe to a manufacturer, they're like, well, what is this? We can't deal with that. We work completely differently. Go away and come back when you have something that we can work with. And so that whole process in itself, actually, and we overhauled the product then completely from obviously what it was in the early days. That lasted until 2017, actually. By that time, we had already got like traction in like with customers, etc. We obviously knew at that point very well what the consumer wants, because we spent years not only obviously going, you know, back to our kitchen and talk to developers, etc., but we also talked to the consumer about it. We talked to actual people out there. What do you want? How should we change this recipe? What else would you like to see? And so by the time when we actually launched then properly, we did launch quite big, in a sense that, you know, in 2017, once we had our range out, that is now, you know, the liquid we have now is what we launched in 2017. We launched it straight into Ocado, we launched it straight into Tesco's and Waitrose, all in within a space of a couple of months. So that was a big job then. 2017 was a big year.
Wow.
But yeah, before then it was you know, a lot of ups and downs. I mean, there still are, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, quite. So essentially, that's really it. So you've got this 3-year period of call it research and development, of sort of, I guess, increasing levels of understanding and experience. Have you got any examples of where in that time of R&D where you'd got it wrong, and where you kind of really hit a bum note?
Yes, sure. There were quite a few moments. We obviously, when you're small, and especially in the drinks world, there's obviously huge manufacturers out there. They can make millions of products a day, like without, you know, I mean, and now I understand as well, because once they switch on the machine, it's like, you know, you gotta produce loads, otherwise it doesn't make sense. But obviously we thought, okay, we wanted to do a small production run of like 1,000 bottles at the time. And, you know, people would laugh at us for that. and we were lucky. We could actually, we found one manufacturer that was willing to help us out. And he was actually a cider producer. He didn't actually, you know, make soft drinks as such, but the production process was similar. So he said, oh, well, of course, I'll help you out. And we were super glad, and I'm still very glad that he gave us this chance, because otherwise we would have never been able to start in the first place, because you've got to obviously show that the product can sell, and then he can approach a bigger manufacturer, because they get like 10 phone calls a day asking, you know, can we produce our product? And they will never hear from that brand again, probably, because it's just like, you know, they weren't successful to begin with. But so he helped us, you know, create this kind of prototype that we could then take out to the world and make sure that, you know, we can show that there's traction. But the production process was not the most straightforward. And so basically, first of all, Julia and I were basically working on the production line with them. Wow. We thought, you know, we were mixing the product with them, and then also like tinkering with the recipe a little bit as we went along, like trying it once in a while. Like, oh no, this is not quite right. Add more of this. And one day we added a bit too much. We were producing our cucumber. And because the first kind of day when it actually then gets pasteurized as well, the flavor profile changes a little bit. So the next day, the manufacturer calls us. Is like, oh, I think this product is completely different now. I don't know what to do with this. It's changed so much in taste. We should have not added all these things that we did. But then we tasted it. I mean, I was freaking out. I was like, oh God, we ruined the whole production run now. And then we tasted it, and it was actually really good. Different, but really good. Actually, we preferred it. Wow. So we're like, okay, we just created the, and everyone loved it as well. So we by accident created this recipe. But that, you know, kind of stuff like that, where you're like, oh, well, this should actually not be possible that we be tinkering with the recipe as we were filling. And then I think the lowest moment of all was when he had just got this new machine, because he did crown caps only, but we needed screw caps. And he said, no worries, I get this new machine. I'll set it up for you and then we'll do this. But when we arrived, we asked him, had you tried anything with this machine before we came? He's like, oh, no, we're going to do this now while you're here. So we filled the drinks. We filled the bottle with a drink. And he was like, oh, so Kirsten, because I was just standing there in front of the machine. Now I could just put the bottle in the machine. And then we'll get the machine to put the cap on, and then it needed to be fastened, right? And he said, oh, let's just test it out. So I was standing there in front of the machine while the machine put the cap on and fastened the cap. And unfortunately he had put too much pressure onto that. And the machine went too hard on that bottle and it burst in my face. It's like the glass bottle shattered in my face. I thought I was blind at that point. Really? I thought this is it now. I'm blind. But then, you know, it was all fine in the end. Actually, it was fine. I was okay. I just had a few scraps and stuff, but I was actually okay. But in that moment we thought, okay, maybe it's time to move on. Accidents like that make you wonder, you know, what are we doing here? But still very grateful that he helped us out. And without him, it wouldn't be probably, you know, because every step in our process was kind of vital in some ways. But then also it was good to move on as well. Because at that moment, wasn't quite sure if I would still be able to continue with this business.
It's almost like things start to get serious real quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, oh, we're tinkering around, we're playing with the recipe, we've found someone to help us out, it's all cool, we'll just take some more cucumber in it, and it's all worked out fine, great. And then suddenly you could have ended up with no sight, you know.
Yes.
And it's like, hang on. And it's so interesting, is it all apocryphal tale? Because oftentimes with businesses, I think it is all, particularly in the early days, fun and experimentation and everything, and then suddenly you realize you are playing with fire, you know, and it can go wrong in multiple ways. And that's a great example of one.
Mm.
Yeah. So you've got this 3-year R&D process where you're tinkering and playing and experimenting and blowing up glass bottles and all sorts of stuff, sort of incrementally getting yourself to the point where you can actually become part of the industry, I guess, rather than just these kind of crazy people with these ideas that, you know, to change the world kind of thing. So you had this 3-year process, then you had this massive launch in 2017. So I'm interested to know, like, okay, that must have been pretty kind of intense, the moment of launch.
Yes. Yes.
Just tell us what. So you kind of get into the point where it's actually a proper industry approved sort of drink that's ready to go, and you've got retailers ready to go, and it's now at scale, and it's getting serious. So what was it like in that moment? Like, again, just sort of, we've had the moment where you left the corporate offices. What's the moment when you were just about to press the button on this launch? What was going through your mind then?
I think for that, we need to go a little bit further back, but not that far back. I mean, we launched it basically. We launched this new, it was basically new branding, not the current branding, but the previous one, in not only in glass bottles, but also in cans. So we had committed to doing not only doing one size of bottle, but two size of bottles as well. So basically, 750ml bottles for sharing occasions, cans for grab and go, and 330ml glass bottles for the restaurant trade. So all of these things, we just said, let's do it all. Let's get these, get all the different types, variations produced in obviously a number of different flavors as well. So there was a lot of product suddenly that we had to produce. So there was a lot of fear going into this whole thing already. And then also, I think it was actually in the December or just before, so it was December 2016, when we already obviously had done all these, made those, these changes, invested in these production runs, new branding, et cetera, et cetera. And, but you know, that there was a point that, in the journey when we weren't quite so sure if this was going to go anywhere, you know, because, it was also winter time, and actually one thing we thought initially, oh, where this product sits really well is a coffee shop environment. You know, this is like where people can, you know, find out about any product because there's not a lot of clutter in there. But then, you know, winter time is not when a coffee shop wants to sell soft drinks. They sell hot drinks there. Mm. And it was a bleak time for us. And basically we were just, you know, we didn't have like this big chain signed up or anything. We were just like putting all our eggs in this one basket saying, we have improved the recipe. We love it. We know it's great. We have this new branding. We're going out there now with this big push. But at the same time, the traction wasn't quite coming through. So there was this moment when we really thought, shall we just not continue anymore? This is not gonna, we've worked so long on this recipe. Yes, we have perfected it now. Yes, we've got this new branding, but we haven't got this, you know, we haven't got this big moment yet, this big breakthrough moment. And, I remember talking to Julia about it and we were both so down. And that was probably one of the lowest moments. I mean, and what was so awful actually thinking about, what shall we do with the team? We had a very small team at the time. We're still a small team, but that was just heartbreaking to think we have to tell them, you know, this is it now. We can't do this anymore. We've got all this stuff done, but what is next? We don't know. No one's answering our emails again. And then funny enough, almost the next day, we get this email from Waitrose saying, we love this product. We want to stock this. And then we were like, wow, okay, this changed everything. This one email changed everything. Mm. And then we were like, okay, we're ready to go. We want to do this now. And then February came along when we actually did this big launch. And it's always with these launches, you have this big buildup and then the day happens and the day itself is then actually, oh, well, another product is out there. And the whole world should be talking about it, but actually they're not, because it's just another normal day for most people. So that hype, and then with this launch, you can't be like, you know, okay, now everyone will stop and take notice. That's not quite how that works. But obviously the excitement of knowing, okay, we're launching into Waitrose, first of all, which was is a great, great retailer to get into, Ocado. And then briefly thereafter, Tesco finally, after lots of meetings with them, lots of emails back and forth, also finally said, let's stock you. Those were these moments when you get an email like that, and then the hype to it and actually, you know, making it happen. That was where the excitement was.
Yeah, it's funny that moment of the dark moment when you think it's all about to sink into the quagmire. You know, like I know that feeling very well. It's always the sort of, in fact, if I'm really honest, this week I've had a moment that's been like that, where we've had this kind of like a whole lot of stuff in our business has been going pretty well. Then we've had a run of things not going so well. And I just literally this week, I was on holiday last week and I came back thinking, have I just like really just got this wrong? Like, I mean, I know you may think that hosting a podcast about how not to blow up your business, I might have sussed it out and learned by now. But really, this is a living experience for me, where I was on Monday morning coming back from my holiday. I was like, maybe I'm just no good at this. Maybe I've just messed it up. And I've kind of attacked it two or three days and got to make some changes. And then what's really weird, we've made some changes and made sort of some shifts in my focus, much more clarity. Almost immediately, once we've made those changes, other things like good news starts to drop in, like your email from Waitrose. I've had that this week, literally. It's been weird. Like Wednesday, I'm all like, I'm shit at this. Thursday, something drops in, woohoo, I'm not.
Yes, it's funny how this works. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, your inner kind of, you know, your feelings or your thoughts inside are kind of eating away at, you know, your confidence. And then this comes in and, oh, wow, okay, actually, maybe I'm not too bad. Maybe this is actually a good thing.
Exactly that. It's, yes. So, it's so funny you say it because I kind of have that. Your one's emotions are so invested in the business and the vision and the hopes and you have for it. And so your Waitrose email. So you had this dark moment where you were kind of looking in each other's eyes and thinking, maybe we can't do this. So when that Waitrose email dropped in, what happened? What was your feelings around that?
We were ecstatic. Wow. Okay. Finally, you know, something good came out of all this hard work. Someone actually acknowledged it and gave us a chance. And we needed that chance because, yeah, how can you prove that you can sell if no one wants to stock the product in the first place? So Waitrose giving us that, and on Tesco as well. You know, we both retailers, we've had this long relationship with now, been in there since, as I said, 2017. And product can be good, as good as, you know, as you can make it. And our product was pretty good. I mean, it's still pretty good. But if the world can't see it and can't taste it, there's no point. So this was our final moment where, you know, the stars aligned and it's funny how this happens because it's usually just the person within that company that makes that decision. And it's very personal. You know, if that person does not like the product because of personal taste, they would probably not stock it in the whole shop, even though maybe other people would like it. So yes, it is a little, it's a fine line. It could go either way. And we just finally, it was our time. Finally, it was our moment.
Yeah, it's funny when you describe it like that. It's so terrifying. This sort of razor's edge that you're walking, and I guess we all walk in our different ways. But you've got to kind of get that sort of walk that fine line. So looking back at all of this now, there's this moment of truth, really, where, like you say, the product could be perfect, but if those people don't agree with you, then no one's going to be able to buy it because it's not on a shelf. So that this moment of truth, when the Waitrose email came in and then others came in and you've had this kind of launch. But looking back now, so this is kind of almost like, let's call it a split the game into two halves. There's the first half, which is your research and development, and we believe in it. And then you have this dark night of the soul just before the Waitrose email arrives. And there's this second half where it's in on shelves and it's a big bang sort of thing. Looking back now, from that first half where you'd really invested your heart and soul and it hadn't quite worked, what did you learn from that experience, do you feel?
Well, as I said earlier, you've got to be patient. that is still one thing that we need to just continuously because it doesn't get easier. I mean, it gets easier because you know what kind of conversations to have. You can predict certain, you know, certain kind of cycles. You know when external forces most probably will align, as in like they have a yearly kind of or certain windows in the year where you know they would make changes. So you do have more knowledge, but at the same time also, again, you know, it is down to other people making decisions and their timelines, and you just got to be patient. So that's, I guess, one thing. And don't give up. I mean, it's hard because, you know, at what point do you say this is it? I don't know. don't lose the confidence in your product too early. Again, I don't know. You know, had we had that email not come in, we would have, you know, these things would have turned out completely different. And then maybe this email would have come in maybe a couple of weeks later when we already decided that we didn't want to continue anymore. I don't know. I mean, sometimes you just also have to be lucky, I guess, and be at the right place at the right time. And so hard work plus a bit of luck gets you quite far. But then also you need to definitely, you know, have a little bit of, you know, persistence and be able to wait a little bit until that one person then makes that final decision. So it's a couple of things in that recipe that need to come together. And but of course it starts all with the hard work. I'm not, you know, it's you gotta do the work to begin with. Yeah, and nothing can replace that, really.
That's a good shout, because really the luck comes from, there's a phrase, isn't there? When luck comes from when preparation meets opportunity or something like that. Is that hard work, the groundwork you put in, is the only reason someone's going to take you seriously when you do send them an email or get them to taste the product. Just one thing about, you mentioned about don't lose confidence too early. Confidence. It's really interesting. I just want to focus on that for a second, because I think this is something I've been struggling with. Like I say, this week, I kind of really knocked my confidence. I was very in the sort of like feeling very negative and a bit sort of like undermining myself, perhaps, to some of my thoughts. And so confidence, again, is a really magical thing, you know, because you obviously have to have a certain sense of self-belief and confidence to do, you know, to leave your corporate job and start to believe you can do something you've never done before. But then it's so easily undermined by things or situations. How have you maintained your confidence, or how do you maintain your confidence?
That's a good question. Because it fluctuates as well, just as you said, you know. Mm. I mean, it's not that you think when you start something after this amount of time now, after 7 years, it will be easier, you know, but it isn't easier, because there are other challenges to fight. There's always another thing coming your way. And yes, how do I make sure that I stay confident? Sometimes, I mean, what's definitely helpful is having someone else in the business, not just, you know, not just me as a single founder. I think that definitely helps, having someone else there that you can just confess to and say, hey, actually, I'm not feeling good about this right now. And that other person, usually there needs to be that person that then says, don't worry about it, it will be fine. Today this is this, tomorrow this is something else, we'll get through this, right? If you have obviously both of us negative and not, then there is a problem. But luckily usually it's like one person down, the other one is kind of up, you know, or has to then be that person that is upbeat, probably thinking the same thing. It's probably also thinking, oh no, but you gotta, like, you know, so that is really helpful. And that I'm really grateful for. So, and just sometimes you just have to let it pass, you know. I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh my God, this is the worst thing. And then come next morning, I'm like, oh, actually, what was I so worried about? This is just, you know, so sometimes you just have to like let it sit for a while. Don't overreact, you know, like have a think, or don't have a think. Maybe go do something else, come back to it later. And then maybe it will, or most of the time, it just will look a lot easier to deal with. Or maybe things will have then already emerged, like some new email has come in, like for you as well this week, where, you know, and suddenly this changes everything. So yeah, I mean, obviously it's hard to, it's always hard in the moment, but you kind of have to take a step back and look at the whole picture and look at yourself looking at the whole picture as well. So that's what I'm trying to do often, is just, you know, look at myself from the outside. And that sounds a bit funny now, but you know,
that's very wise, actually. It's just funny, that whole perspective on oneself thing. I think you said something there that's really, I think, almost quite profound. Your t-shirt message should say, don't have a think. Yeah. Sometimes you need to not think anymore. You need to stop thinking and go and have a bloody swim or a run or a cup of tea or just don't think about the damn thing, because that's the solution. Because all you're doing is your analytical mind is just crushing any level of sort of confidence or creativity or whatever. I'm guilty of this, by the way. And I have this sort of very active analytical mind. I now have got better at observing it and not engaging with it, or just forgiving it and letting it just drift away.
Yes. Yeah.
So your phrase there, don't have a think, is I think quite profound, actually, because if you start thinking about it all the time, that's when you start overreacting, because your mind just convinces you it's a catastrophic disaster happening, when actually the email hasn't landed yet.
That's right, exactly. And we said, actually, this is what I'm trying to do, and it helps every time, even though it does take me a while to actually then do it. But I love running, and obviously everyone loves different things, but to get their mind off things. But for me, running is amazing. I just go out and just run somewhere. I don't even think about where I'm going. I'm just going. Yeah. And every time I come back from it, I just feel like I feel so much better.
Yeah, do you know what's funny? I've got into running through lockdown, and I never was into running. I now run a lot, but whatever it is, actually, it's changing your physiological state. Yeah, whether that's running or doing a bunch of burpees or going for a walk or something that changes your physiology, changes the chemistry in your body, which changes your emotional state, which changes your psychology. Yeah. And in our Western society, we sort of think that the brain is king, the analytical, rational mind is the CEO of your body, right? It makes all the decisions, and that's what you should invest in. But you have brain cells distributed across your body, and your emotions are nested in your body, and your emotions are the things that guide your rational mind. It's the subconscious that is your, in effect, your body, your emotional state. And so one of the things is, if you go for a run, you're just kind of re-engaging parts of your human system that your analytical mind is just too arrogant enough to think that it can control it, but it isn't. It's the rider of the elephant. There's a social psychologist called Jonathan Haidt who has a visualization, there's a metaphor, which is your rational mind is the rider of an elephant, right? And the elephant is your subconscious mind. And if the elephant decides to turn right, your rational mind, the driver of the elephant, goes, yes, I've always wanted to go right. That's exactly what I wanted to do, because look at what's over here. This is great. But actually, you just got all this other stuff swimming underneath the surface. So having the ability to just switch that off and get out of your own mind and act your physiology, for me anyway, is a life hack for loads of business stuff. Because actually, all these ideas and stuff just come out of, or creativity can come out of that. Anyway, I've had a little rant there, but that's
yes, very, yes.
Literally, I was out this morning having a run, and a lot of stuff was like, yeah. And it's I never plan where I go. I just go off and just run and see what takes my fancy. And that in and of itself is great, just to don't have to think about it.
Yeah. And you know what is even more mind-blowing life hack is it's just standing. You don't even have to move. I mean, moving obviously is amazing and it's good, but actually just standing up while you're having a phone call or standing up while, you know, being on Zoom. I know it's a bit difficult if you don't have a table high enough, but I did that yesterday, and oh my God, I mean, this is a big revolution for me. I had no idea this was, it changes things. It does. Yeah.
I'm 100% with you there. And I think there's something here to do with like patterns, and just if you're always sat in the same place all the time, and then your brain and your thinking and your way of being is the same all the time. And walking about on a call, yeah, it changes those patterns. And I think it's really important, I think, to try and find the ability to do that. Or I find it important for me. I don't know. I totally agree. That's really great insight. Stand, everybody. Right, we're heading towards the end of our time on our podcast. What a great conversation this is. I could carry on all day with this. This is brilliant. So much good stuff in there. But I'm going to ask you a quick question in 60 seconds, because we've not got much time. What advice should other entrepreneurs ignore?
Most advice they should ignore. Yes. Every I I think back to all the advice. I mean, because advice, everyone has advice, right? Yeah, even I mean, especially my mom has advice, but my mom doesn't know anything about business. She's good at other things. But everyone has kind of their opinion, and you just have to take every piece of advice, even if it comes from like someone that has been in the industry for a very long time, you still have to take it with a pinch of salt, because everyone's situation is different. Everyone's aspirations are different. So until that person really knows everything about what you want to do, where you are right now, what's driving you, what you're trying to achieve, it's really hard for that person to give advice. And so just whenever, you know, obviously it was a lot of advice as well, you know, it's coming from a good place. People mean well, but doesn't mean that they understand you well. And you just have to always figure out, does that actually work for me at this stage? Or, you know, should I just go with my gut feel?
Yeah. And I think going back to the body and the mind, gut feel. Yeah. It's your intuition and your gut tells you stuff that's very difficult to articulate rationally, but it's giving you a message, and often that's acting in your best interest. And I think that's a really good insight there about you are on your own path. It's your path. And so other people can have an opinion, but you still your path, and all the context around that is unknowable to anybody else, really. So stick to what your gut is telling you is right, as well as your head or anybody else's head. What a great way to finish off our conversation. That's really been so rich and full of great stories and great advice. And I personally have got some little tidbits in there. So thank you so much. Where shall we find you online, Kirsten?
So yes, we have a website. It's called Nix and Kicks, nixandkix.com. You can also find us or our product on Amazon. And as we mentioned multiple times, you can find us in Waitrose, you can find us in Tesco's, Ocado, Morrison's, Sainsbury's, and loads of other great places in the UK and abroad.
Well, do you know what? I'm 100% going to be buying your product, because it sounds fantastic and right on my street. And I'm so pleased that we've got a chance to hear the story of how it came to be. So everyone, please check them out, and please get in touch with her and buy lots of this beautiful drink, because we want to see you carry on being super successful. Thank you so much. Well, I will sign off now, and I'll look forward to seeing you next time. Stay on the line. We'll have a quick chat afterwards, and I'll see you next time, everybody. Bye.
Do you want to get the top 5 tidbits from each episode email to your inbox every Friday? Yes, you do. It saves you having to go through and make notes and make a note of all the books and all the ideas that are in the podcast. We go through and we choose the top 5 we like, plus put all the links into that email. So if you just go up to honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, yes, that's honeyibluewupthebusiness.com, and just enter your email address. There's a little box, just enter it in, and we will send you that information. And it saves you having to make notes and all that. That's make your life a bit easier. And of course, if you did enjoy the episode, please consider subscribing. We are trying to help people through this. So the more people that subscribe, review, rate on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the more people will see it and the more we can help. So help us help other people, other entrepreneurs like you. And before I go, I've got to say big up to my company, the tech department, the company we blew up and put back together again. They're generously supporting me on this mission through the podcast. So if you guys want to have a look at a company that can really help you improve your technology, make it better so your business gets better too, boosting your sales and your profit and a bit more sanity in your life, a little less stress, then head up to thetechdept.com, the tech department. My company, give us a look. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time.